BSC Breakfast powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go.
The best way to get you going. This is VOC Breakfast with Gulam Fakir, only on The Voice of the Cape.
VOC Breakfast powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go. So last night we saw the announcement of delivered by the IEC, the outcome of the 2021 local government elections. The IEC revealed the official results, and according to the IEC, the African National Congress achieved a majority of the votes and will now govern 161 municipalities across the country. The Democratic Alliance achieved a majority in 13 municipalities, and the IEC's chairperson says that the Inkatha Freedom Party is now responsible for about 10 municipalities. But I want to bring this closer to home, we've made a big thing about this since yesterday already, because we know that the people of Cape Town casted the votes on Monday, keeping the Democratic Alliance in power here in the metro. And the DA member and mayor-elect Jordan Hill-Lewis, who is also the youngest mayor recorded since 1994, he joins us in studio this morning. Although he's only just 34 years of age, he's also a member of parliament. He also served as chief of staff for Helen Zille when she was premier of the Western Cape. Jordan, good morning. Thank you so much for your time.
Very good morning to you, and salam alaikum to all of your listeners. It's really great to be with you for my first in-studio interview after the election. It's really great.
That's absolutely fantastic. So it's another mark for us that we can check off our checklist. Jordan, obviously with regards to congratulations firstly for the Democratic Alliance on getting the metro again. I know it was there was a lot of campaigning, a lot of small parties also making strides within especially with communities within on the Cape Flats. So I must be honest, when I saw these political parties coming on, I was like, okay, this is going to be a very interesting election. We're looking at independents that came on board in areas like Bonthierville. We're thinking of parties like the Good Party, like the Patriotic Alliance, the Cape Coloured Congress, all of them making strides, and I'm thinking these guys are going to, they're going to come out and do their thing. And then the Democratic Alliance, of course, still took the majority. And that obviously also showed clearly with regards to, the governance of the municipality, that people were probably okay with that. Hence, they're casting their vote for the Democratic Alliance. But we've also seen a decline, though, in the rural areas.
That's true. Yeah, I haven't spent too much time studying the results in the rural parts of the Western Cape, but it's true that most of the municipalities in the Western Cape are now hung councils, which means that no one party has got 50% plus one. The DA is still the biggest party in most of those places, but without a majority. So now we've got difficult coalition negotiations the next few weeks. And I think that reflects exactly what you said. It is a more competitive environment now. And there are a lot of smaller parties popping up, and that does mean more unstable coalitions. And so it's going to be a tricky period over the next few weeks to negotiate those coalitions, but I really hope that we can keep DA-led governments, coalition governments in most of those places, so that we can keep those small towns as well run as they currently are. But yes, as you said, in Cape Town we've got a strong, nice, lovely majority, 58.5%, and I really want to thank all of your listeners, all Capetonians, for that very heartfelt support. From the bottom of my heart, I appreciate it, and I will work every day for the next 5 years to make you proud of your decision to support me and the DA in this election in Cape Town.
Right, so let's get into some of the hard-hitting questions that came through. So what we did was we posted the interview that we promoted the interview on our social media, and we said to our hundreds of thousands of followers on social media, we said, any questions for Jordan Hill-Lewis, please post it in your inbox us in Marivan. We'll collate some of those and we'll post it. Obviously, we can't ask Jordan everything coming from 100,000 plus people. But there were a lot of duplicated questions, so we could, combine them and then take it from there. So the one concern that many analysts firstly had, many civic organizations had, was that they are asking for the new mayor to basically relook at the Mako team. They're saying that this Mako team has perhaps served for a bit too long. That's resulting in complacency. You're seeing decisions being made that is not necessarily in the best interest of the people of Cape Town. The poor is being neglected. And they want the new mayor to please re-look at the Mako team. In fact, they went as far as saying replace the entire new Mako team. Is that something on your list?
Yes, in the next couple of weeks, I've got to announce my mayoral committee team shortly after the swearing-in ceremony. Let me say that one of the big reasons I ran for this job was because I really believed that Cape Town needs a injection of fresh energy, some youthfulness, some new ideas, some innovation, and that has to reflect across the board. So it can't just be the mayor that reflects that. So it's great that I've got elected now, and I must now make sure that my administration, from the leadership team downwards, also reflects that injection of new energy and fresh ideas.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that everyone, there also has to be some continuity. You've got to have some experience in continuity. But yes, no, I am looking forward to reflecting that change and refreshment in our team.
We're going to be opening up the lines. If there are any questions that you'd like to ask the new mayor-elect, he will be sworn in on the 18th of November to officially welcoming him into the mayor's seat. So if you've got any questions, please give us a call on 021-442-3530. Let's will be taking your calls. You can also WhatsApp us on 0829913913. Jordan, one of the things that are very contentious, in fact, there are two, three contentious issues that I can think of at this point in time, but I'm going to break it down in sections so that we can deal with it specifically. The one is water. That is very, very expensive in terms of what residents have to pay for water. We're looking in terms of, for example, the blue water meter system that is not working in Cape Town at this point in time. People are up in arms about it, you know, and they're saying it's just too expensive. There are unnecessary levies that are attached to it as well. What is it that you can do as the new mayor of Cape Town to work around a plan to have this reduced or looked at to make it a little bit more viable for the people of Cape Town?
Thank you. We came out of a terrible drought a few years ago, and we realized at that time that in order to future-proof Cape Town, in other words, to protect Cape Town from this happening again, we had to invest many billions of rands more in water infrastructure, new sources of water, recycling wastewater into clean water, as we are doing now out in Makassar, that plant is under construction, drilling into the aquifer, cutting down alien vegetation around our dams and rivers to save water. So there is an enormous amount of investment that is going into making sure that Cape Town has enough water for the future. And it's important that we do that because all of the predictions is that Cape Town is going to get drier, not wetter. Now, you never know whether those predictions are going to be true.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the weatherman gets it wrong nearly every day, actually.
Yeah.
But those are the formal predictions, that Cape Town is going to get drier, not wetter. So we've got to prepare for the worst. And we are spending billions of rands to do that, to protect Cape Townians from water shortages in the future. At the same time, let me say, my expertise is in finance. I've come from Parliament where I've seen how working families in South Africa have been taxed to the limit. Fuel levies, VAT, income tax, going up and up every single year. Was it last night or Wednesday night? We just had another significant fuel increase. So I'm always looking for ways to make it cheaper for Cape Townians, and I will be looking for ways. If there's any way that we can still fund that infrastructure program, investment program, and make it cheaper for Cape Town's working families, I assure you I will be the first one to get out my red pen and start cutting stuff. And I will go through that budget with a fine tooth comb to look for opportunities to do so. I know in my own family, in family members, I know how tough working families have got it at the moment, especially after COVID. Yep. 2.5 million South Africans have lost their job. So we've got to look for opportunities to make it cheaper for people, and I'll always be looking for chances to do that.
The other thing also, and I think just on the water issue as well, I think it's a lot of, and I know you've touched on it where you said, you know, you will be looking at how it is that you can reduce that, especially like with the levies and stuff that's associated with pipe levies and all that kind of jazz. But I don't want to hop too much on one of the points, for example, like the water, because although we've got an hour with you, you know, that there's just so many other things that's coming through, even on the WhatsApp line, and I want to squeeze it in. So the next one has come through, and this was part of your pledge and campaign during the elections as well, was load shedding.
Yes.
So a lot of people are saying, you know, that you have pledged that the DA or the city of Cape Town are looking at ways in terms of how it is that we can work around the load shedding. Mm. You know, so talk to us about what are the plans, you know, that the city of Cape Town has got going. When can we see some rollouts happening? And please tell us that it won't be too much of a cost on our side.
Hmm. Oh, this is one of the things that I'm most excited about. Let me just start by saying load shedding really outrages me, and I hope that it outrages the listeners as well. We've had it for 15 years in this country. In that same time, we are paying 430% more for electricity. Eskom prices have gone up 430% in the last decade. We've paid 400 billion rand for two new power stations, neither of which work, and we still don't have power. We cannot hope to grow this economy without electricity. We just can't. It's by definition, you won't grow an economy without electricity.
Yeah.
So we, you know, all of the talk about poverty and unemployment and all of that is frankly just nonsense until we sort out load shedding. So I am absolutely committed to sorting out load shedding. I think it will be one of the most important things that we can do for Cape Town's economy, to help people get back into work after COVID, to help people get out of poverty and into employment.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's accurate to say this is an obsession of mine, and it's going to start on day one. Now, the way that we do that is by investing in purchasing power from IPPs, in so-called independent power producers, which the regulatory changes now allow us to do. And crucially, investing in storage. That's already why Cape Town is allowed to protect you from one level of load shedding, because we have a big, massive battery, basically, called Steenbrus Hydroelectric Pump Station.
Mm.
So we've got to invest in more storage so that we can store that extra power that we're buying from IPPs and then give it to the city when there's load shedding. So the truly exciting part, my focus is on load shedding. But if we are buying power from solar power producers and wind power producers, we are buying that at a fraction of the cost of what we are paying Eskom for dirty coal power. For example, last week, the stage 5, round 5 IPP bids were released.
Mm.
The cheapest solar power in that bid is 35 cents a kilowatt hour. Just to give you a comparison, the city is currently paying Eskom about 1.67 rand. So we're looking at about, what is that, less than a quarter of this price.
Yeah.
So if we can buy that power cheaper, the more we can buy of it, the more we can pass that saving on to consumers. So actually, we're now entering an exciting future where, as we reduce our reliance on Eskom over time and increase our reliance on renewables over time, we can start to pass savings on. Now, that's not going to happen immediately, because we currently buy about 2,500 megawatts from Eskom. It's a big city.
Mm.
So you can't just switch that off overnight. That takes a long time. But we just got to slowly do that. Increase the renewables and decrease the Eskom.
Mm. Okay, but now also I want to just stick on to, before we go for our news and commercials and traffic, there was one thing that I think is important that we also need to talk about, Jordan, and that is to get your view on council that's capping prepaid electricity. For example, somebody's rates are in arrears, right? And now I'm talking about people particularly, and I'm pleased, without prejudice, who's ever listening to us. We're looking at Mitchell's Plain, Manenberg, Hanover Park, Delft. You know, all those people that's living in those areas on the Cape Flats, they go and purchase 100 rand electricity, they get 10 units back, right? For 100 bucks, you get 10 units. We go to the city, we say, hey, what's going on here? The city say, oh, because your rates are in arrears, right? Now, don't get me wrong, and I've spoken to a family that said, we're not denying that our rates are in arrears, you know, but because of circumstances, this and this and this is the issue. The problem that the family had is that nowhere on the rates paper does it indicate to say, we have taken 90 units away from you. For example, 90 units. Let's just work on round figures here. You're the finance expert, not me. So let's say, for example, you used to get 100 units for 100 rand. But now you are getting 10 units for 100 rand, which means 90 units have been taken away. But that 90 units are not being displayed on your rates paper. So there's no recollection for these, for this family to go and say, but you've taken a 90 rand or 90 units from me when I purchased that. And so the capping of electricity at this point in time, Jordan, it is not a viable option in the economy that we're finding ourselves. Our people are struggling, let alone, so they buy electricity. In fact, right now, you're buying electricity. Eskom switches your electricity off. What are you buying, actually? Do you know what I mean? So there's a lot of frustration that is building with regards to that. But just to simplify the question, what is it that you can do for our people, and anybody, mind you, for that matter, that has a problem with the capping of electricity, because you are basically paying for something that you know, the city is just willy-nilly taking from you?
Okay, no, the city is not willy-nilly taking it. They're taking it if you are in arrears, only if you're in arrears. Now, let me just say that the reason that Cape Town works, the reason that Cape Town has service delivery that is well above average of the rest of the country, is this is the only city that is well run financially, that can say that no money is stolen, money is well spent, that there's enough in the bank to cover our costs. Now, we've got the announcement the other day that 106 of South Africa's municipalities, nearly half of South Africa's municipalities, are falling over. They're going bankrupt. The towns are crumbling. They're under administration, or they're about to be put under administration. That is not ever going to happen in Cape Town, because we look after the rands and cents. So we can't simply stop collection of arrears. If we did that, Cape Town would start to topple over very, very quickly, because then people would just simply stop paying. So we've got to make every effort to collect those arrears. But what I do like about what you're saying, and I will look into this, is that the rates bill should reflect that. The rates bill should reflect that repayment portion. And I don't know why that isn't happening, but I will absolutely look into it and make sure that it does happen. But just to say that every single person needs to pay their rates bill, and we understand that sometimes people go through circumstances which are beyond their control. They lose their job or they lose their loved one. And the city is always open to discuss repayment plans and to enter into those repayment plans. But what we often find, what I most often find, is that people who are in the situation that you're just speaking about now have never gone to the city out of, maybe they're embarrassed, maybe they don't know that it's happening. Mm. Their parent deals with a bill or whatever the case is, and they don't know what's happening. And they have made no attempt to discuss this with the city to try and enter into an arrangement. And if they do, then this would not happen. And so we really encourage people, go down to the city, write to us. We are always willing to, we are a caring city. We are willing to talk about this and enter into an arrangement, and then this kind of thing won't happen.
Mm. Now, Jordan, it's gone 28 minutes after 7 o'clock. I want to go for some commercial news. I want you all to go for some news at the bottom of the hour. And perhaps we can talk a little bit more about that when we come back after the break, because I specifically just want to know, is this even a viable option, you know? Because people are struggling. I understand that the rates bill and all that needs to be paid, but you know, getting only 10 units, for example, for $100, that is a bit excessive. I'm sure there's something else that can be worked around it. I want to go for traffic quickly. When we come back, we'll go for our news and all of that kind of jazz. Don't go away.
VOC Breakfast, powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go.
The best way to get you going. This is VOC Breakfast with Gulam Fakir, only on The Voice of the Cape.
We are in discussion with the mayor-elect for the Democratic Alliance in the city of Cape Town, Jordan Hill-Lewis. And just before the break, we basically spoke about, you know, the rural areas that didn't perform too well in the Western Cape, but also about somebody saying, like, civic organizations talking about the Mako member that should be replaced. We spoke about the water issue. We spoke about load shedding that has been, it's been going at us for the past 15 years. We also spoke about, you know, that capping of prepaid meter accounts, the electricity meter accounts. Now, I just wanted to, and I don't want to delve too much on this, Jordan, But in terms of how this capping happens for with the electricity meters, I don't necessarily think that it is a viable solution to for somebody to purchase 100 rand electricity and to only get 10 units. Surely there must be another way that one can work around that. Can you please see what it is that you can do as mayor, you know, with your micro member for finance and so forth, to see how it is that we can work around that? Because, like I said earlier, you know, our people sometimes, that's the only thing they have. They're literally sitting with a situation with they've got a 10 rand. Do they buy electricity or do they buy a loaf of bread? That is how dire the situation is. So is that something that you can look at?
Yeah, I can look at it. I can. And I, what I will say is that I'll sit down with the team next week and look at how that capping works. It's still absolutely essential, and I hope that we can agree on this, that everyone has got to pay their rates and taxes.
Yes, 100%.
So that's that we can't, you know, kind of debate, but absolutely, I can look at the capping of that and see what is possible there. I want to be able to help Capetonians who are going through really difficult times. Mm. I also just want to reiterate, please, if you are going through a tough time, speak to your local ward councillor, speak to your city office. We can help. There's lots of indigency programs. Cape Town this year alone is going to spend 2.9 billion rand on indigency programs. That's free basic services for the poor. That's more than any other city in South Africa, by the way. Mm. That's more than Joburg spends on it, even though Joburg's got nearly double the population. So we are really trying to help people in tough situations. I want to see if I can increase that amount even further for the coming year, for the next financial year. And I think we can do that. So we're trying our very best to help while still maintaining financial viability and responsible finances in Cape Town.
Mm. Okay, so I think also, you know, one of the things, and I've been saying this to my producers as well, you know, is that, you know, when we get Jordan Lewis in studio with us, he speaks to us about this. He says he's going to be doing this, but it's important also for us as a media to call Jordan up with this once a quarter. You know, come and join us in studio, give us feedback in terms of these things. We don't expect, and I think it would be very unreasonable for us to think that if you can walk out of the studio tomorrow, things need to happen. But I mean, a quarter, surely something should have happened. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I think that is the relationship that we need to build up between us and yourself as well.
Perfect. Let me just say, I'm totally happy with that. I would love to come in regularly, and I've taken notes of these things, and I can give you feedback on that either via email, or I can come back and do it in person, and I'd love to do that. You've got an open door with me and to the mayor's office.
Fantastic. I appreciate that. I'll keep you on speed dial. Let's talk about the spatial planning, you know, the housing issue here in Cape Town. We know that the national government has released, you know, pockets of land earmarked for development back as far as 2016, and we know as part of the Good Party, where Patricia de Lille is the leader, she went out to, I think it was Ruland Street, where she basically earmarked this piece of land since 2016. No development has been happening there. I mean, she was sitting in the same seat where you were sitting, and I said, but you were mayor at the time, you know, why didn't you also do something about it? And she obviously explained what the politics were around it as well. But we need to start or stop blaming one another. Things need to start happening because our housing list is increasing. In every municipality, in every housing office, there are always issues with backyard dwellers, with people not having sufficient housing, and also the quality of that. But let's look at the spatial housing issue at this point first.
Yeah, so the very first commitment that I made, and every time, if you go back and look at when I've spoken about this in the campaign, every time I spoke about this, I started with my commitment. First do say what I'm going to do before I ask someone else to do something else. And so what I said was that my commitment is for the faster release of well-located city land for more affordable housing for Capetonians. So the city's got a whole lot of these little pockets of land, old buildings, open parking lots, whatever, that we can release for more affordable housing, and we must do that. And I'm going to absolutely focus on this and unblock that drain to speed this up. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the request was, if you add up all those little pieces of land around the city, the big pieces, that the massive army bases that that national government owns, which are not used, are 72 times the size of all of those city pieces combined. So we are talking about, you know, a mouse and an elephant here. Yeah. In terms of comparison. So I'm going to do my part. I'm going to release those pieces of land faster, and I'm committed to doing this. I want more Cape Townians to have access to housing, to get out of poverty, to get the opportunity to own an asset. What an amazing blessing to be able to get that title deed. And I'm really committed to that. Mm. But can we also get other levels of government doing their part? That's my request. It's not blaming, it's a request. I want to work together. We can make a real difference to the housing shortage in Cape Town if we can get even one of those massive pieces of army land. Mm. And let's be honest, we're a medium-sized city with 5 army bases. What on earth do we need 5 army bases in a medium-sized city for? These are army bases that have been there since World War I. Wow. We don't need them anymore. Let's unblock that and make a big difference.
Cool. So that's talking about the special housing issue here in Cape Town in particular. But when we come back, another point with regards to housing is something we're going to be talking about with the Mayor-elect Jordan Hill-Lewis. And of course, he'll be sworn in on the 18th of November. This is his first interview since the victory for the Democratic Alliance in studio interview here on VOC Breakfast. So you heard it here first. 21 to 8 o'clock, some commercial news. When we come back, we continue.
VOC Breakfast, powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go.
Get your day started right. This is VOC Breakfast with Gulam Fakir. Only on the Voice of the Cape.
91.3 FM VOC Breakfast, powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go. 17 to 8 o'clock, we're in discussion with the new mayor-elect for the city of Cape Town, Jordan Hill-Lewis. He will be sworn in on the 18th of November. Jordan, so we spoke about the spatial planning and the commitment that you've made that you made with regards to looking at spatial planning for housing, particularly here in Cape Town. Now, the one thing, and again, you know, when Antipat was here, I spoke to her about exactly the same thing, and this is with regards to District 6. So this has been a contentious issue since democracy. Nobody, unfortunately, is taking responsibility for this. It is laying in the lap of the city of Cape Town, but there's only certain things that the city can do, and then there are certain things that we need to wait for national government, etc., etc. But everybody, there's nobody taking responsibility, and people are shifting blame. And as a result, the people of Cape Town and the rightful owners that were evicted through the Group Areas Act back under the apartheid regime, that people are dying. You know, they are not benefiting from moving back to District 6. What is the city under your leadership going to do to enhance and to ensure that this process is going to be sped up and very quickly, mind you?
So let me say that I've discussed this at length with Helen, who worked on this issue for nearly 10 years, variously as mayor and premier. I even discussed this issue with Patricia back in the day, who was working on this issue as well. And it is such a... There's a wonderlike weskaap of word. It's such a tamaleki. Mm. It is difficult. It is slow moving. And the core problem is, I'm afraid to say, that the project was taken over in the early 2000s by the National Department. And so the city has our normal planning role to play. If you want to build a house or build a garage on your house, you must submit plans and so on. We have our normal planning role to play, but we are not the main developer in the District 6 restoration project. It's the National Department. And it is dragging and dragging. So all I've said in this campaign, and I do mean this seriously, if there are any examples of where the city is slowing the process down through the planning procedures, then please, I need to know the details of that, and I will absolutely make sure that we do not slow the process down. But we are not the main developers anymore. We're not the main delivery agent, so to speak. It is the National Department, and so our role is through our planning department. But if people can let me know if there are any specific examples, I don't just need general, you know, the city hasn't the city hasn't gone fast enough. Specific examples that the city has slowed the process down, I'll absolutely work on that.
And I think that this is important. You know, like District 6 is home to
many.
Man,
it's very important. It's very important. When every time I see that empty land there, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
In the heart of our city, with all of those elderly people who are beneficiaries, and as you say, many of whom we are losing month by month without going back to that beautiful corner of the city. So no, it is very important.
Now, what I want to do is I want to invite people to get onto our Facebook page quickly. I'm going to go live because on Facebook as well, because I want to pose some of the questions that came through from our listener on Facebook as well. So please get onto VSC's Facebook page. We're going to do that for just about 5 or so minutes, and then we will continue with our discussion. So we are in discussion with the new mayor-elect, that of course being Jordan Hill-Lewis. Now, Jordan, the other thing is, and I think this was a very... If I think about it now, you know, in fact, even at the time, it was a very, not blunt, but I don't know what the city council was thinking actually at the time. The issue with sections of the bylaw dealing with noise pollution, dealing with the adhan, you know, the call to prayer, whether it was the adhan, the church bells going, or whatever, you know, with religious institutions, that in itself, you know, there was a call for that bylaw to be amended, and it was literally just a line that needed to come out of that section. I think it was section 3 or 23 or something, if memory serves me correctly. The city is, you know, it came up a couple of weeks before the elections. That didn't sit well with the Muslim community. What is it that you can do to ensure that this process also be sped up? And the reason why I'm asking you this, back I think in 2016, the issue raised its head the first time. The city promised to have this bylaw amended. In 2019, the same thing happened again. The city promised again, we're going to have this bylaw amended. Now they went to again amend a bylaw that deals with vagrants, but there's somehow a linkage between the two sub-bylaws or subsections of the bylaw. Why is it that it wasn't, for example, amended one time? You know, because at this stage, if somebody finds the adhan or the church bells to be a nuisance, they can still call law enforcement, and law enforcement will have to go out again and check it out because the bylaw has not been amended. So is this something that you can please prioritize as well? We've been promised this now on 3 occasions already.
A simple answer, watch this space. We are going to sort it out quickly. I honestly don't know why it's taken so long. Sometimes you hear these things and you kind of just shrug. But there was a decision to sort it out. We've got to go through a public participation process, and as you said, it's a small amendment, and it can be done quickly, and it will be done quickly. The only thing I would say, I live in a part of the city where I'm sure many people around the city are seeing this. Actually, you see it on the Black River Parkway, you know, next to the river there, on Sundays as well. There's churches that are starting to hold their church services on open fields next to roads and so on. And they have these loudspeakers. And I literally have it in Edgemead where I live. And that's not right, because they, you know, they're starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. They're blasting those speakers, and it's not a church. It's on an open park, or it's on an open field, or so that kind of thing can be. So there must be a way to deal with that concern. It's not. It doesn't have to always be done as a noise nuisance complaint. We've got to figure out another way to deal with that concern, to go and speak to those religious leaders, to, you know, ask them to find a community hall or something like that. But we can find an alternative dispute resolution mechanism and put that in there for where there are legitimate concerns, but otherwise it can absolutely be sorted out.
Great stuff. So I'm glad that you know, we've got the new mayor-elect you know, to basically look at this because a lot of people are asking about this bylaw to be amended. Now, surely, I mean, when you came into the studio this morning, Jordan, you know, the first thing that you came in, you said, good morning and assalamu alaikum. And that gave me the impression that you know that there are, you know, that you understand the Muslim voters here in Cape Town. You know that there are people people, you know, from our community that do vote for the Democratic Alliance because of the services that, that the Democratic Alliance or the MAKO has delivered over the over the next 5 years. But one of the things that, you know, these very same Muslim voters have something very in common with many people across South Africa, across the world, is the Palestinian issue. And that is something that obviously has come through on the WhatsApp line where the people wanted to know because, and I take you back not too long ago, you know, council came down in Salt River Woodstock area and they painted over Palestinian flags and freedom, you know, positive messages of Palestine. They painted over it and they said this is vandalism. But in the very next row, there's graffiti of normal people sitting listening to music and whatever, and they're like, ah, this is freedom of speech, you know. So what is your stance with regards, or the DA stance with regards to the issue of Palestine? Because this is, you know, has been going on for far too long, the first thing. And the second thing is also, the Muslims of Cape Town would want to support a political party that can understand the oppression that is happening towards the Palestinian people.
Okay, well, there's quite a lot of issues in there. So let me just start by saying I've grown up in the church in my local community, and my faith is very important to my life. And so I have a deep understanding of how important the religious community is to improving society. There are some things government can do, and we can do those things well, delivering services and, you know, building better schools and hospitals and so on. But there's some things that government can never do that the religious fraternity has to help us with, and that is, you know, healing people's broken families, intervening in broken marriages and with drug addiction and so on. So I really love, part of what makes Cape Town so amazing is that we have this incredible diversity of religious freedom and religious backgrounds and cultural diversity and historical diversity. So I really appreciate this community. I really understand it very well. I understand the values because it's exactly the same values, let's be honest. The values of family, the values of respect for God, respect for authority. Those are values that we share across religion, and so I really understand this community. Also, I'm a Cape Town politician. This has come up in every election, and we've always said very clearly, very explicitly, we absolutely support the right of the state of Palestine to exist. We support a two-state solution. As long as it is able to exist alongside in peace with another secure state of Israel, then you know, that's our position, and I think that's the responsible position taken by most informed people around the whole world on this issue. But let me also say that the vast majority of Cape Townians, even though this issue keeps being raised in every election as a way to try and exploit people's religious views for a political end, which I think is a terrible thing to actually do, this issue keeps being exploited every election. But every election, the vast majority of Cape Townians of the Muslim faith support the DA because they care about who is going to actually govern Cape Town well. And so it's wonderful to see results like us winning on Monday in Boerkop on the PR ballot. And you know, this is an area where this issue is probably the biggest issue the biggest area where this is an issue in Cape Town, and still the DA wins there because most people care about who is actually going to run the city well for our kids, who's going to make this a place where our futures are secure, where we can have a sense of hope and optimism for the future, and where we do things that are caring and based on the right values. And we share those values, and that is why this community is so supportive.
I think, Jordan, just on the Palestinian issue, I mean, Palestine has existed for many, many years, and I think the discussion around a two-state solution is something that have passed a long time ago. You know, the right to Palestine is, you know, about the oppression that is happening in Palestine, and I can understand also where you are coming from, but I think that particularly around the issue of the two-state solution thing, I think that is a long time past. We want to see, you know, from many other politicians, mind you, as well, you know, that they take a strong stance against, you know, the oppression of the Palestinian people. You know, it's a situation where you said you lived in Ijmid. I mean, imagine I come to your house and I just, you know, open up your gates and I'm like, right, I'm living here now. You know, and then everything else must just follow suit. All hell will break loose. You know, so I think we need to, you know, the Democratic Alliance need to take a firm stance with regards to the Palestinian issue. There are many people that is coming out and speaking against the DA because of the stance that they're taking with regards to Palestine. I need to wrap up, and I know you've got another interview that you need to go to as well, but I've just got one or two more questions quickly that
you're
came
welcome.
Through. The one was, can you please ask the new mayor-elect as to whether the policy at the city of Cape Town to block ratepayers will be public, and if he think it is the right thing to do.
What does he mean by block ratepayers?
I've got no idea. I'm reading it as is. It says, ask the new mayor-elect whether the policy at the COCT to block ratepayers will be public.
I'm afraid I'm not sure what the listeners are referring to. If you can send me more details, I'll happily look into it.
Okay, cool. No problem. Then there was also one that also came through here on the WhatsApp line, and I think this is important as well, Mayor. That is what...
Maybe he's talking about blocking them on social media. Is that what he means? Let me just say what my policy is. If there's any swearing or vulgarity, or ugliness or abuse, I will use the block button. So let me just send that message out. I don't like vulgarity and the use of foul language and that kind of thing on social media. You don't need to. You can make your point firmly and strongly.
Yeah.
And you can do so with respect. And we will all. I will do that always. I will make my point firmly and strongly, but with respect. And I expect that from other people as well. That's just common.
Yeah.
We are humans.
I think
that's
you need
common
to be courteous.
Decency. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will. If that happens, vulgarity, profanity.
Mm. Jordan E. Lewis actually said to me that he will stay for another 5 minutes, Ms. Lowe, after the news. So I want to go for a quick break because he's got another interview at 10 past. I've got just one or two more questions and perhaps you can squeeze it in very quickly. People are saying, listen, you spoke about the ward councillors earlier, but people are saying, but our ward councillor don't answer phones, never in the office, can never get hold of them. What do they do?
No, that is not right. Let me say, we pride ourselves on what we call the DA difference. So that is that difference that you see when you drive into a DA town and you know, oh, here there's something different, things are working, there's good service. We expect professionalism from our public representatives and availability. And so they absolutely must be getting back to residents. They must be answering queries and following up on these things. If they're not, I want to know about it, please. That doesn't mean that residents should please be unreasonable. Remember, ward councillors are humans too. They have families. They have family time. So, you know, I've got phone calls, someone calling at 3 a.m. Calling at unreasonable times with small things. It's not an emergency.
Yeah.
And there is an emergency line if it is a real emergency. So be reasonable, but absolutely, from our side, the standard that we set, we want to be better than anywhere in South Africa. We want our public reps to be available and transparent and professional.
Mm.
And if that's not happening, please let me know.
Fantastic. Let's go for a quick break. We also go for our news at the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to wrap up with Jordan E. Lewis. He's the new mayor-elect here for the city of Cape Town. You heard it here first on VOC Breakfast.
VOC Breakfast, powered by MTN. It's go time everywhere you go.
The best way to get you going. This is VOC Breakfast with Gulam Fakir, only on the Voice of the Cape.
I can confirm that Jordan is the new mayor-elect for the city of Cape Town, Jordan E. Lewis. He's still in studio with us. I've got 3 more minutes left with him. But I can confirm that he absolutely loves the VOC Breakfast jingle. Every time it goes, and you can see the shoulders going as well with it. So that's fantastic. Jordan, so the last few minutes of the show, thank you for staying on for another few minutes. I'd really just like to hand the microphone over to you in a sense. You know, in terms of your accessibility as a mayor, people want that, firstly. Secondly, you know, turnaround time for service delivery, will it be prioritized? So I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. Please, again, remind people, as the new mayor-elect for the city of Cape Town, what it is that you will bring.
Thank you so much. I've loved this opportunity. It's been a great chat this morning. Thank you for the questions. I'm happy to come back whenever you want me to. There'll be an open door with the media and with the public, and hopefully, you know, people will send through good suggestions and good ideas, and I've got absolutely no problem. In fact, I think it's very important to be held accountable. I've come from Parliament, where I've spent a lot of time in opposition, so I know a bit about accountability and how important that is. So thank you for that. Let me just say, final word on the purpose. What is the purpose of our government going to be for the next 5 years? It's going to be to make Cape Town a place, a city of pride and hope in our country. There are so many families who are deeply concerned about the direction that our country is going in at a national level. And I want there to be one place in our country where you can look to and say, that is what South Africa is capable of, the best of our country, the best of our people, the best of unity and diversity and working together to achieve something important for our families and for our future. And that is what Cape Town is going to be, or we are going to work very hard to make it that over the next 5 years. And that means that we're going to set high standards for service delivery and availability. And we won't always meet those standards. We will often fall. But I assure you that when we do, we'll own up to that failure, and we will get back up and try harder. And that's my commitment to you. Thank you so much for the chance.
Thank you very much for the opportunity this morning. Mayor-elect for the city of Cape Town, Jordan Hill Lewis, that joined us here from 7 o'clock this morning here on VOC Breakfast. His first interview here as being elected as a mayor. We're going to go for some commercial news. When we come back, we continue here on VOC Breakfast.